It's June 28th. You're listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production by the Institute for Humanist Studies. I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
I'm afraid of your prey, and I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God. Rise up to your higher power.
On today's show, we're going to hear from Michael Newdow, the California atheist suing to have the words "In God We Trust" removed from U.S. currency and "Under God" removed from the Pledge of Allegiance. We're also going to hear from an atheist comedian, and a little later in the show, we're going to find out which superheroes are religious and which ones are not. And sadly, we're going to say goodbye to Dr. Tim Gordonier, former public policy director and humanist lobbyist in New York State. Tim's final day at the Institute was last week. For those of you just joining us, this is a monthly program dedicated to sharing the humanist perspective on religion, politics, and pop culture. Humanism is a secular philosophy based on science and reason. If you'd like to learn more about humanism, and maybe even find out if you yourself are a humanist, check out www.humaniststudies.org. That's the website of the Institute for Humanist Studies, a nonprofit organization that makes programs like Humanist Network News possible. Well, let's get the show started. Michael Newdow is a lawyer, doctor, father, and atheist activist living in Sacramento, California. He currently has two lawsuits working their way up the court system regarding the use of the word God in our national discourse. His first lawsuit charges that requiring children to use the phrase "under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance violates the rights of atheist children. His second lawsuit, which was recently dismissed by a California court, charges that the phrase "In God We Trust" on U.S. currency violates his rights as an atheist by forcing him to carry monetary instruments that contain religious dogma. Elaine Friedman, editor of the weekly online Humanist Network News e-zine, spoke to Newdow by phone yesterday.
In case our listeners aren't aware that "In God We Trust" was not always on American currency, could you just tell us briefly when was it put onto the currency?
Okay. In the coins it was first put in 1864. It got on a 2-cent piece after a minister of the gospel wrote to the Secretary of the Treasury and said, "You are probably a Christian," and thought that we should have the recognition of divine providence on our coin. And if you go through the history, it's quite clear this was done to worship God, nothing historical, just to have everybody know that we believe in God.
Okay, great.
And
thank
you. That was 1864. I'll just continue quick. It wasn't mandatory, though, until 1908, I think, the first law that mandated it at all. That was after Theodore Roosevelt had a coin produced that didn't have it, and everybody got crazy. So they mandated it, but only for the coins that were certain coins at that time. And then it became mandatory for all coins and currency in 1955.
I just wanted to ask your reaction to this, to the ruling from the court that said minted words amounted to a secular national slogan that didn't interfere with religious views, and it's just consisting of a national motto that has nothing whatsoever to do with the establishment of religion. What do you think about that statement?
Well, I think it's nonsense. I think probably the judge who said it thought that he was following a precedent from 1970, a case called Arenow, and that's what the three-judge panel back then said. I think it's ridiculous. I think it was a three-judge panel. In any event, I think nobody honestly believes that. No, clearly, it was. If you go through the history, there's no question this is not secular in any way, shape, or form. It was done specifically to worship God. And as a matter of fact, there was people complaining over the fact that we weren't worshiping God that got it in there. I think it still means the same thing today. I mean, you know, you see it used all the time. The chaplain in Congress uses it, you know, when he's in the middle of his prayer to God. You know, it's always stuck together with all these other religious acknowledgments. If you read, you know, any of the Supreme Court cases or anything, you know, it's always put together with purely religious activities. So to say it's secular is absurd.
Are you going to continue with this lawsuit? Are you going to appeal it to a higher court?
Sure, yeah. It's called a loss, but in fact, if you understand the way our legal system works, I always try to lose in the district court, so I consider it a victory. I consider it a loss when I won in the Pledge of Allegiance case in the district court, because when you get to the Court of Appeals, they take it de novo. They start all over. And so what the district court does is basically provide them with an amicus brief. It's nothing more. They do whatever they want in the Court of Appeals, and when you're there, if you've lost in the district court, you end up with an extra brief. You get the first brief, they get a respondent's brief, and then you get a reply brief. So you get an extra brief, you get the first and last word, you get an extra 50% space, and you also get the first and the last word at the oral argument. So I think it's a great advantage to lose in the district court. I'm very happy with that.
So this case is now going to an appeals court?
It'll go to the Court of Appeals on the Ninth Circuit, yes.
What is the status of your other lawsuit regarding Under God and the Pledge of Allegiance?
It's got I'm supposed to, on Monday, have my respondent's brief in. There, like I said, I won in the district court, which is bad because now the other side has the advantage. They get the first and last brief. I have my respondent's brief. It's due on Monday, but I'll probably get a two-week extension just because I don't have time. And the 2 weeks won't help because I'm working in an ER nine shifts in between that time, but I think I'm going to need it anyhow.
Which of the two lawsuits do you think is more important? Do you think removing In God We Trust from Currency or Under God from the Pledge of Allegiance is more important?
I think they're both important. I think the idea behind all of this stuff that I do is that we should be treating everyone equally, and we're clearly not doing it when government is taking the side of people who hold one religious view. I think they're both important. I think I don't know if I could say which one's more important. You know, one is our Pledge of Allegiance, the other is our national motto. Both are huge, and both should not exclude people on the basis of their religion. Shouldn't exclude people at all, but certainly not on the basis of religion.
And I just have one more question for you. Do you feel any hope that the higher courts will rule in your favor in either of these lawsuits, or do you think that this is...
If they adhere to the Constitution, there's no way they can't rule in my favor. This is not just, you know, posturing. This is real. I expect to win. I expect them to do what the Constitution demands. And there is no question that this violates the principle of neutrality. We just came out with McCreary, the Ten Commandments case. The court confirmed that we're going to use the purpose prong of Lemon. We're going to look at the government's purpose. In both of these, the purpose was unequivocal, that it was done to worship God, and that they violate neutrality. The court reaffirmed that even between religion and irreligion, the government has to stay neutral. So I expect to win.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I know you've been very busy, and thank you for taking time to answer our questions.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
That song was Waiting for Rain by Circe, a band based here in Albany, New York, where this podcast is produced. For more info on Circe, check out sirsy.com. You're listening to the Humanist Network News Podcast. I'm your host, Duncan Crary. We were just listening to Elaine Friedman, editor of the weekly Humanist Network News e-zine, speaking with Michael Newdow about his Under God and In God We Trust lawsuits. Michael Newdow recently joined the advisory board of the Secular Coalition for America, a 501c4 lobbying organization in Washington, D.C., working to promote secularism in government and to protect the rights of non-religious Americans. Newdow is joined on the advisory board by actress-comedian Julia Sweeney of Saturday Night Live fame and the eminent scientific thinker Richard Dawkins. The Institute for Humanist Studies is a founding member of the Secular Coalition for America. But how would you know that unless you visit www.humaniststudies.org? Want to stay up on the news in the weeks between Humanist Network News podcasts? Then you better check out the weekly Humanist Network News e-zine at humanistnetworknews.org. There you'll find lots of great news, opinion, humor, cartoons, and even an advice column for secular folks like you. Next up, we have a real treat. This is a recording made especially for the Humanist Network News podcast by atheist comedian Jamila Bey. Here's the Gospel of Judas.
A reading from the book of Judas. Jesus went to his apostles and said, "All right, guys, and Mary, I know you've all left your jobs and your families to come and follow me, and that's just super. So, in your honor, I have prepared for thee a feast." "What?" "I heard that, Thomas. Yes, it will be a feast. We'll have wine, we'll recline, and it'll all be fine. Who's in?" And the 12 plus Mary agreed. "Fabulous! So everyone go to the upper room. I've taken care of everything. Just tell Simon you're on the list, and he'll let you right up. No problem." "What?" "I heard that, Thomas. It is not a closet, it is an upper room. A penthouse, if you will." "I don't know what a penthouse is either, but Thomas, just shut up and believe me for once. I swear I don't know what I put up with him for." "You're right, Judas. He is my test." The apostles left and went to the upper room. And once Simon the Pharisee checked credentials to find that everyone was indeed on the guest list, the supper commenced. "So on the menu tonight, we've got some wine, some bitter herbs, and some killer bread from that sweet little bakery down the street, where the baker, with that body, kneads the dough with his strong hands. Anyway, I want to thank you all again for everything, so dig in." "What?" "I heard that, Thomas. This is too a feast." And when supper had ended, he took the cup, drank it, gave it to his apostles, and said, "Wow, this wine is great. Remind me to pick up a case or a jug or whatever." And then he took the bread and he broke it. He gave it to his apostles and said, "I've really got to lay off all this bread and wine. It's hard to cry poor if we all get fat, you know." And again, the apostles agreed. And they were happy. All the chosen 12, plus Mary, were fulfilled in spirit and in the body. That is, except Thomas. Jesus knew this and said to those gathered with him, "I can't believe this. I try to do the best I can to be a good savior, and nobody appreciates it. I wear this unshapely frock and these stupid sandals and go without a decent massage in months, and this is the thanks I get. Well, I'll tell you what. Eat me. Okay? Just eat me. Eat my flesh. Drink my blood. You just take, 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 take." As Jesus was overcome with emotion, his tears poured bitter down his face. "Thomas there thinks I'm getting fat. Simon Peter is going to tell everyone that he wouldn't be seen dead hanging out with someone dressed like me. And Judas is the only one who's been paying attention long enough to understand that I actually need one of you to do the deed that will allow me to bring salvation to all mankind. All mankind plus Mary." With that, Jesus turned to his chosen Judas and commanded, "Hit it, Judy." And Judas ran out into the night.
That was The Gospel of Judas, written and performed by Jamila Bay, a seasoned producer, editor, journalist, and on-air talent. Jamila Bay's work has appeared on National Public Radio, Air America Radio, WDUQ, and CrossFit Life. Jamila is also a stand-up comedian who has performed at Stand Up New York and DC Improv. I spoke to Jamila on Monday.
Jamila, you recently performed at the American Atheist Conference this April doing stand-up comedy. How long have you been performing as a stand-up comedian?
Probably about a year and a half intentionally. I'm sure my elementary school teachers would disagree with that. But as far as actually going out and writing material and meeting to do it, I got started about a year and a half ago, and I've been doing stand-up in Washington, D.C., where I live, and I've done some dates in New York City, and I hope to do some more.
And before you started your work as a stand-up comedian, you used to be a producer and a reporter in professional radio. Where did you work? What stations did you work for?
I got my start back in Pittsburgh at a public radio station, WDUQ-FM. And that was the radio station that was on campus. It wasn't campus radio. It was a legitimate news radio organization. And I walked up in there one day and said, "Hey, you hiring for anything?" And they asked me some questions that made me write words and spell Susquehanna and Allegheny and I think Rappahannock, too. Being a Pennsylvanian, we have to know how to do all of that. So I got started in news, literally tripped and fell into it. And after that, I did some work with American Urban Radio Networks, and I decided that I loved public radio, and in 2000, after I'd been a reporter for 4 years in Pittsburgh, I finally got the chance to come on to Washington and be a little fish in a huge pond here, and I did that for a while and realized that journalism is a wonderful field, but I'm a comedian at heart.
Now, when you were on the air as a reporter, you know, were you ever joking around, even though you weren't supposed to be?
Unfortunately, oh goodness, oh wow, I didn't know you were going to ask that question. I once, if anybody is as big a Les McCann fan as I am, one might understand that the refrain of the song "Compared to What" is, "God damn it, trying to make it real compared to what?" And being that the station I worked at Pittsburgh was a jazz station, I could always have playlists that would come through the studio speakers that wouldn't be what the air signal was people were listening to. Mm-hmm. So once I had to interview the mayor about some budget issue that he wasn't too happy to be talking about, and I broke out into the refrain of "Compared to What?" And he thought I was swearing at him. And when I tried to explain, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm listening to the air signal or the studio signal," he said, you are not. I'm listening to the radio station right now, and you're not even playing that song. Don't try." You know, and at that point, the interview just kind of went, "Well, where's the money? I'm not telling you." You know, and that was that, but I had him on tape, so
yeah.
There we go. I think that was, today that's funny. Back then it was, it caused some nail biting.
Well, there's a new trend in comedy with Comedy Central, and I think there's a new show now called Man Bites Dog, where you know, making fun of journalism in the news business is sort of the new topic for comedy. Are you working any of your experiences as a reporter on the radio into your comedy bit?
No, I'm not really. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, I really believe that the difference in news and comedy is timing. You know, they've got that in common. If it's current and it's not so current that you can still talk about it, well, it's funny. Mm-hmm. And if it's too current to talk about, but you talk about anyway, well, then it's news. So, you know, they have that in common, and I genuinely believe that once you get to know some of the people who are reporting the news, you can't help but laugh. And I mean that in a good way. In a good way.
Yeah. So. Well, Jamila, what about, how do you approach religion in your material?
You know, all of my material is based upon my own experience. And rather than the trend that has happened, and some comics are really good at it, you know, Seinfeld is the, you know, is the example of just observational humor, stuff you see and think it's funny. But for me, I really like the more personality-based, more this is who I am, this is a story of stuff that happened to me type of humor and storytelling. And understanding that, I don't seek out, okay, well, let me write 3 jokes about religion. Let me write a joke for atheists. The stuff for me that's funny just happens to be funny, period. And religion is a big part of this society, so you really can't stay away from it. For me to talk about, I'm not even telling a joke right here, but okay, so my mother was a Southern Baptist. She converted to Catholicism when I was 5. My father was a black Muslim, but he no longer practices. I was raised Catholic. We were all confused when we were little. You know, we celebrated Christmas, but really didn't know why. And I learned that if I ever wanted to get thrown out of class in Catholic school, all I had to do was start a sentence with, "The Honorable Minister Elijah Muhammad teaches us that." Should I just take the hall pass or just go right to the office now? So, just talking about, no, these are things that really happened to me. They're funny in and of themselves, and that's not to say that I haven't tried to say, okay, well, let me talk about religion in a way that's funny. But I just think religion lends itself to being ridiculed and chuckled about at.
Now, do you find that we recently hosted a group here at the Institute for Humanist Studies, the Black American Freethought Association, and one of their concerns is that the Black American community is so religious. Do you find that, you know, in certain audiences, you know, that are maybe more black or more white, that certain jokes are funnier to certain, you know, audience members? Or
now that's a question that requires its own show, to be honest with you. The short answer is yes, but the thing that's interesting to me is, of course, but why?
Right.
Whenever studies of religiosity are conducted or talked about, the number one group for being most religious is always, always, always black American women.
Yeah.
I wrote a piece February-ish for skeptchick.org. Those are some folks you should talk to if you haven't already, and I might be telling on myself if you have indeed, and I just didn't listen to that particular podcast.
You're busted.
But, I'm busted. Oh, no. But, you know, the piece I wrote was I had never, at the time that I wrote that piece, I had never shaken the hand of another black woman who would use the atheist word.
Yeah.
I have met black women who will say, no, I believe in no supernatural higher being. No, I pray to nothing. No, I don't believe in supernatural beings called gods. And then I'll go, well, you're an atheist. No, I am not. Don't you dare call me that.
Yeah.
Because there is this perception that to call oneself atheist is to reject one's blackness, which I really don't understand. I think it's a very interesting question. The word is, in the opinion of many blacks who hold atheism as a legitimate point of view, the actual word is anathema.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be mentioned. And I do believe, and it's not even my belief, studies have shown, scientific studies, that is, that a number of health problems in the black community can be traced to the high level of religious belief that black women in particular hold. Black women will pray and meditate and light candles and use oils rather than making sure that they exercise and eat right and get enough sleep and try and manage stress to prevent diabetes. So, you know, and then there are these studies that happen that say, oh, well, you know, prayer cures tumors a lot of times. And you go, okay, well, let's replicate it. You know, let's go back to what everybody learned in middle school about the scientific method. Can you do it again? And people go, well, it's a miracle. That's what a miracle is. And you go, well, you know what? No, that's called a fluke.
Right.
And you can't talk to me about flukes because they just don't matter. Sorry. But then again, you know, it's funny because, or I think it's funny because when I do that on stage, people think that's material. And I go, no, this is actually a conversation I had with the aunt of one of my friends, and she's telling me that she prayed away her brain cancer. And I'm going, no, you did the chemo, you did what the doctors told you, and okay, fine, you prayed, but you can't say that the prayer took it away. I know the prayer took it away. And I'm like, you're go away, you know, and you know, it would just make them too happy for me to, you know, start swearing at them, but, you know, it's, you know, I'm trying to, you just go, okay, whatever, well, do it again, you know, do it again, and then I'll believe you.
Now, in addition to your work as a stand-up, you also have a blog, and it's allurb.com, that's allurb.com. I was checking out right before I called you. And I saw a few entries caught my attention. Hola Taco Nacho, my plight as an English-only speaker, was one of your recent posts. And there was another one called Make Your Plan for Getting Healthier. And it seemed like you were attacking some, or you were approaching some of these same issues. You were making fun of being having a little bit of junk in the trunk, but then giving some serious advice on how to get healthy. And you were speaking directly to black women, I believe, in that entry. Is that right? Do you try to mix?
Indeed, that is. Allurb.com is a blog that I write. It's a newer blog, so, you know, any ideas for it, there's a link to email me. Let me know what you think. But it is talking directly to black American women about any issue that black American women could concern themselves with. And One of the beautiful things about black women, I think, is that the belief that one must be a size zero to be attractive, that one should look identical to a news anchor or what is in the current issue of Vogue is how one should look to be attractive. Black women don't subscribe to that, and that's a very good thing. However, when you say, I am attractive, but I can't walk up a flight of stairs without stopping twice. When you say, I am beautiful, but I'm taking 6 pills for hypertension, high blood pressure, and I'm pre-diabetic. It's time to say, okay, yes, my self-worth is not dependent upon the way I look, but I need to address the health issues that go with the way I look. For example, I'm always going to have thick lips. I'm always going to have a wide nose. That is not going to change with my dress size. So I can still love those things that are inherently ethnic about me. Trust me, if I could straighten my hair by going on a diet, I'd have done it by now. So I don't have to dislike who I am as a core individual, and I don't have to base that upon the way I look. But I do have to do my workout every day. Every day that ends in day, I should work out. and doing that is what keeps my, I mean, I have a doctor that says I've got the bones of an 18-year-old boy, which is a very good thing because that's pretty much the thickest bone density that a woman can register. And I've got cholesterol that's so low nobody believes me, and I tend to do very well on those health tests because I work out and I work out hard. And yeah, I could probably stand to lose double digit pounds, but at the same time, I am taking care of my health. And too often, it's not just black women. Too often, American women don't worry about the health. They look at the outward appearance. And if you can't pick up your body weight off the floor, if you can't lift at least half your body weight up to chest level, you're not strong enough. You're probably not fit enough when it comes to flexibility and strength. And there's some work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I've done is I'm a strength coach too. So it seems like I get interested in something and then I do it as a profession for a while.
Uh-huh.
So making Americans fitter and healthier is definitely something very close to my heart, and my blog will address a lot of that.
Okay, and that's allurb.com.
That's it.
Well, Jamila, thanks a lot for talking with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, it is always my pleasure, and anything we can do to spread the light of reason, let's do it.
Devil walked into the bar. I swear this isn't a joke. He ordered up a whiskey, then he lit a smoke. Said I can make you a rich man, I can guarantee that you won't fail. I told him you could have my soul, and all I want is an ale. Cause heaven's full of assholes playing harps and singing hymns. I tell you I'm not dying to be one of them. So I'll see you in hell, I know all my friends will be there. He just makes me thirsty, and the devil, he owes me a beer. Street preacher is howling about how we all live in sin. I don't mean to be a bad man, but I don't want to be like him. You know I like to have a drink, I love a sweet woman.
Hello, my name is Roar Jonsson, and I'm president of the Norwegian Humanist Association. And you are listening to Humanist Network News.
And I'm your host, Duncan Crary. That song you just heard was John Whipple with Heaven is Full of... Well, you heard it already. To hear more music by John Whipple, visit www.whipplemusic.com. Before that, we were listening to Jamila Bey, atheist comedian, on-air personality extraordinaire. Don't forget to check out Jamila's blog at allurb.com. At this point in the show, I'd like to be playing some listener comments for you from all of our fans out there in Pod World. But alas, no comments this week. So do me a favor. Write this down, people. 206-339-4168. That's our H&N Podcast listener comment line. Just call the number, leave a message, and we'll include it in our next show. Desperate for feedback, I was surfing the web, reading some Christian blogs, and I did find a Christian blogger out there on Apologia Christi who did listen to our last show about Larry Jones going undercover with the Christian Coalition, and here's what the blogger had to say. In all seriousness and without hyperbole, this is really one of the stupidest things I have ever heard. And of course, the host of the H&N program is all excited and supportive of this cloak and dagger approach. It is simply ridiculous. For those of you who really want to laugh, listen to the program. Well, seek and ye shall find. That's what folks are saying about the H&N podcast out there in Christian blogging world. By the way, wasn't that recording by Jamila really cool? You know how she did that? She recorded it at her house, and she emailed me the MP3 file. It was that easy. If you have access to a computer and a microphone, you could record your own essay or skit and email it to me, too. Hey, if you don't want to use a telephone to call in to leave a listener comment, how about emailing us your comment as an MP3? Send me an email first, though, and I'll go over all the specifics for you. So just send that email to editor@humaniststudies.org. Okay, I'm going to let you in on a little secret now. My boss is out of town. So is my boss's boss, actually. So here's a little secret. Sometimes I get a little bored when I'm at work. And don't get me wrong. We work extremely hard here at the Institute for Humanist Studies, and there's always way more work than there are hours in the day, but sometimes I get a little bored. So I went online the other day, and I typed in, "I am bored," into Google to see what happened. You ever try that? Typing in "I am bored" in the Google search box? Well, the first link took me to this website filled with really cool stuff to check out when you're bored. Real time wasters. Not all of it, though, because that's how I found this next guest that we're going to hear from. Preston Hunter is the creator of comicbookreligion.com, a website that identifies the religion or the atheism of comic book superheroes. Bet you didn't even know they had religion. This project is part of a larger website that you may have heard of called adherence.com. Adherence.com has religious statistics for just about anything you want to know. You want to know how many Mormons there are in Boise, Idaho? check out adherence.com. You want to know what religion the last 12 Canadian prime ministers were? Go to adherence.com. If you want to know what religion that does Superman practice? Adherence.com. I spoke to Preston Hunter last Thursday. How did you get inspired to start looking up the religious affiliations of comic book superheroes? Were you a big comic book reader as a...
I was, and I actually, as a teenager and stuff, I was a big comic book reader. Mm-hmm. Actually, at the time I started the section on adherence.com, I hadn't been reading comics for many years.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised to find that comic book characters had religions? I used to read comic books. I never noticed, you know, that any of them were religious.
No, I wasn't surprised. I was surprised to find how many had religious affiliations. But you got to understand, one of my favorite titles was The New Mutants. Catholicism is very explicitly identified for Karma, for instance. She talks about, you know, going to confession and going to church regularly. And Wolfsbane is identified as a Scots Presbyterian. In fact, her adoptive father was Reverend Craig, who was a fundamentalist Presbyterian minister.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was familiar with characters having religious affiliation.
Okay, the comic books that Preston was reading when he was a kid were pretty overt in portraying the religious affiliations of their characters. Those were comic books like New Mutants and X-Men from the Marvel comic book universe. But it was really only in the last 20 years or so that religious affiliations of superheroes entered the picture. In the 1930s, when superheroes like Batman and Superman first appeared, there was a strong taboo against identifying a comic book character with one religion or another. At the time, there was also a strict comics code that enforced rules about the content. Curse words were forbidden, graphic portrayals of violence were not allowed.
And another thing that was explicitly written into the comic code was you would not denigrate or criticize religious clergy. You wouldn't denigrate people's religions.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that the comics industry shared with the movie industry under the Hays Code as well.
Right.
So you had a long time during which you had a strong taboo, and it wasn't just from the code, it was also from within, but it was from without, from external pressures as well, against portraying anything that could be deemed as critical of religion. And so even though you could, in theory, you know, have religious characters according to the code, they pretty much just steered away from it. They didn't want to see it in any way critical of any religion.
And you thought Muslim extremists had a monopoly on getting bent out of shape over comics that criticized religion, huh? One of the interesting things about the relationship between religion and comic books is that many of the creators of superheroes were Jewish. Stan Lee, the father of Marvel Comics, which gave us superheroes like Spider-Man, Captain America, and the Incredible Hulk. Stan Lee was Jewish. His real name was Stan Lieber. Like a lot of Jewish actors at the time, he anglicized his name. Bob Kane, the creator of Batman, was also Jewish. He changed his last name from Khan. Just like their superhero creations, Stan Lee and Bob Kane had secret identities too. Well, maybe not totally secret, but you had to lift up their mask, so to speak, to discover their Jewish roots. Part of this had to do with their desire to assimilate into mainstream American culture, which was basically white bread Protestant. They could have created Jewish superheroes. There are Jewish superheroes, after all. The Thing from Fantastic Four, for example. I mean, you'd think they might want to, you know, to cast a Jewish character as a superhero to maybe gain some respect among all those white bread Protestants. But you got to remember, they were in the business of selling comic books. And since most Americans are Christian, most superheroes were Christian. But if you're trying to appeal to the widest possible audience, why give superheroes any religion at all?
Even today, with less legal restrictions or social restrictions, the superhero is meant to be representational of everybody and is meant to be iconic. And so especially with the most popular characters, there is a certain degree to which they are left as blank slates with regard to some of their private aspects. They're usually not associated specifically with Democratic, Republican, or other political party. A lot of times they're not given a specific state or something like that. And one of the reasons for that is it makes it easier for readers to project themselves into that character. So Superman stands in for everybody, and his heroic adventures are vicarious for all of us as we read about him. We enjoy it because we imagine ourselves as Superman. The other opposing force is that in order to keep up with the times and make the stories better and more interesting, writers, they want to deepen the detail and of the characters. They want the characters, yes, to have these fantastic powers, but in order to better relate to them, they want to give you details. They want to tell you about their past. They want to tell you about their private life. And that includes telling you about their religious beliefs and their religious affiliation, what church they go to, what church they were raised in. You know, what do they believe about religious principles like ethics and morality and sexuality and God and, you know, all these different things that, that come into play in the area of religion. And so if you want to have, you know, more mature, more interesting, better stories, you got to add details, and religion is part of those details. Now, the ironic thing is, when you do identify a character's religious affiliation and say exactly what they do believe, it doesn't necessarily negate people's ability to relate to that character. I mean, if you know a person is, you know, is strong in their faith, whether, you know, they're a humanist or belong to the ethical culture or are a Church of Freethought or Orthodox Jew or Latter-day Saint, then you can connect to them on some way if you are strong in your faith. If you know a person is lapsed and maybe, you know, struggling and kind of rebelling against their church or rebelling, you can still relate to them in the ways that maybe you have distanced yourself from some of the traditions you were raised with and some of the things that maybe you're questioning or agnostic about. So in either way, you can still relate to that character, even if it's not on the specific name of what they, you know, call themselves with their religious affiliation. Just the fact that they have a religious background, religious upbringing, religious parents, people can usually relate to those characters. So by enhancing the level of detail with these characters, you actually are conversely enhancing your ability to relate, even if it's different. And that's something a lot of writers even today don't fully recognize. I think filmmakers and novelists are more advanced with that understanding than many comic book writers. However, the very best comic book writers, the ones that win the awards and are kind of the fan favorites, those are the ones who use religion most frequently. Those writers are not necessarily religious. Some are very religious, and some are very much an openly atheist, but they use these themes just as they use many other broader themes, you know, political and sociological, and it deepens their stories and makes it more interesting and more relevant and just higher quality literature than just, you know, people in tights whacking at each other.
You know, one of the things I just can't get over is that Superman is worshiping Jesus. I mean, come on. He's the Man of Steel. Doesn't he have more powers than Jesus? What did Jesus walked on water and made some magic wine? I mean, Superman can fly. He made time go backwards by spinning the earth counterclockwise. Wouldn't you think that superheroes with all these godlike superpowers might start to question the existence of Jesus, Allah, Vishnu? Well, some listeners out there might be excited to hear that indeed there are some skeptical superheroes out there, some agnostics, some atheists, maybe even one or two humanists. So who's on the godless team? How about Iron Man, Starman, Green Arrow, Colossus? I was psyched when I spotted Wolverine among the atheists. Wolverine is definitely one of the top four baddest superheroes out there. Except there's one little asterisk beside his name. He's listed on Preston's site as a former atheist. What happened? Did Wolverine have a religious experience in one of the issues?
Well, that's why I've got former up there. I mean, I think I don't have any problem with people looking at Wolverine as an atheist.
Right.
I mean, I say on the site, look, he's very much a skeptic. He's a cynic. He's been an atheist. He's said he's an atheist. But his atheism has been a plot point in stories in which he found faith or found God.
Right.
And he's done it kind of too many times. You know, like he's in the cartoon, there's a very famous episode where he meets, you know, Kurt Wagner, Nightcrawler, devout Catholic, and you know, Wolverine at the end of the episode is praying in a church. You know, we see him in individual comics where he is very skeptical, but yet he's had all these experiences, which then he goes and he talks about with his, you know, Catholic friend Nightcrawler, and he, you know, seems to have a sense of a need for religiosity. I mean, he's outright been portrayed as, you know, going to heaven.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I try to be pretty clear. I don't think Wolverine is in any way an orthodox religious believer, but, you know, right. We see him having a connection to, you know, to Buddhism, to Japanese religion. He has strong ties there.
Yeah.
We see that he's, you know, very sincerely gone and participated in those religions. You know, I don't have a problem with people looking at these characters and saying, look, I mean, here's this character. He said he's an atheist in this episode, and I don't think we should call him former. And
right.
I think from the text, I just don't think it's the best identification.
Yeah, I think it demonstrates how careful you are.
He's a very dynamic character, and
yeah.
It depends on the writer, and it depends on which era you're reading him in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I think you found that with Superman also. Is that correct? He's attended a couple different denominations of churches. Is that right?
Well, Superman is identified on our main list. You know, you got to say we have a summary table where we have just this small cell.
Yeah.
And so, for instance, Superman is identified there as Methodist, and then / in smaller letters, Kryptonian religion.
Mm-hmm.
Because over the years, in he has, you know, had a lot of affinity for Kryptonian religion, such as when he would, you know, curse in the name of Rao, and also, you know, he would openly express kind of a stronger connection to his Kryptonian roots than he does now. And Kryptonians have, for the most part over the years, been portrayed as a fairly religious society alongside being very scientific.
Mm-hmm.
And in some writers, you know, Byrne, I think, particularly portrayed Kryptonians as more of a, you know, secular society, but there's been a lot of, you know, references to Kryptonian gods, and in fact, just a couple weeks ago in the DC Comic 52, it was said that Superman's S symbol, when inverted, is the Kryptonian symbol for resurrection. So the fact that Kryptonians have, you know, some strong religious beliefs, you know, is still present in today's Superman comics. But it's much less important. He's really been raised on Earth, and so his Kryptonian religion is less significant, I think, at today's portrayal than his upbringing, which was on a farm by, you know, rather frequently church-going mom, and who's a Methodist, and his father a Methodist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think any reasonable interpretation of the Superman character, you know, looking back since the 1930s, is that, yeah, he was raised in a pretty, standard Midwestern Protestant home.
Yeah. Now, you've also shown Batman as somewhat of a lapsed Catholic.
Batman is classified as a Episcopalian / Catholic lapsed.
Oh, okay.
And by that, I mean he would be lapsed in either faith. I mean, there's really strong evidence of his being Episcopalian. There's really strong evidence of his being Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to think that there's so much evidence on both sides that they're both correct.
Right.
He probably has one Episcopalian parent, one Catholic parent, and that's another reason why he's so lapsed.
Right.
He had an interfaith upbringing. But when I say lapsed, I mean he's lapsed in both. He's very lapsed.
Yeah.
And when I say he's a lapsed Episcopalian and Catholic, in no way does that mean that he's not an atheist. I mean,
right.
When you say someone's a lapsed Episcopalian, doesn't that pretty much mean they're an atheist?
At least they're on the road to it, if they're not already. Now, one other, I was very excited to see, you do have one humanist listed, that's Mr. Fantastic.
Right, Reed Richards.
Yeah,
from Fantastic Four. I mean, that Reed is difficult, you know, because he's really not overt in identifying himself with any specific religion. And that, in talks with fans and in my readings, I think that's probably the best I can come up with, but it's a lowercase humanist,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not familiar with, you know, Reed coming out and saying he's a a humanist in terms of any, you know, formal affiliation,
right.
with or even identifying himself overtly, saying, well, you know, I'm a humanist. But I think in reading his character, I think that's a good interpretation. I think every one of these superheroes are humanists.
Uh-huh.
But when we're talking about religious affiliation, you know, on my site, we're trying to identify the most accurate affiliation for individual characters, and we're tending towards, you know, more of a formal affiliation. And I really think if you look at all these characters, yes, I think they're pretty much all humanists.
Right, because they act, they care for humanity,
right.
Their actions are humanist, yeah.
Right, but I think, I don't know of any, and I wish I did, but I don't know of any who are, you know, who are formally associated with any humanist churches or denominations,
yeah,
or organizations.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one last question, I know you got to go. Are comic books a religion in themselves?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
And what makes you say that?
Well, how would... I mean, comic books are as much a religion as Catholicism or, you know, secular humanism,
mm-hmm,
or veganism or communism or, you know, anything else that's a religion for people.
Yeah.
Not all people who read comics are... someone who you'd say comic books are their religion, just as not all people who are, you know, vegans are people who you'd say veganism is their religion.
Right.
Most people who, you know, are atheists in terms of, you know, they'd say, well, you know, you believe in God? Well, no, not really. Most of them, I probably wouldn't say that that's their religion.
Right.
I'd say something else is their religion, something that's the most important thing to them, the thing that they derive their values from. It might be, for instance, you know, in the case of a Maoist, you know, someone in China, they might really strongly believe in Maoism. And
yeah,
you'd say, well, do you believe in God? No. Well, what's important to you? Well, let me show you this little black book that was written by Chairman Mao. And this is really the truth. This is really where we should be at. You know, the same thing with Marxists and stuff, who pretty much was an atheist philosophy, but I wouldn't call them atheists in terms of religion. I would call them Marxists or communists, because they really believed in the teachings of Marx, and they really believed in the Communist Manifesto. And for many people, comic books are definitely their religion. That's where they derive their values. Just like for many people, Star Trek, you know, when it was much more popular, Star Trek really was a religion for many people. Star Wars is a religion for many people. Science fiction in general can be a religion for many people.
Mm-hmm.
Sports can be a religion for many people. So, mm-hmm, but you know, comics are more prone to be a religion than some fan-oriented things, because it really can form a whole community. I mean, comics has churches that dot the country where people go every week,
yeah,
and usually on Wednesdays, not Sundays. But they go and they talk to the minister, mm-hmm, who's behind a cash register. And they talk to other people who are in the comic shop. They pick up the comics. They read them religiously. So, yeah, definitely comics can be a religion.
Mm-hmm. Well, Preston Hunter, thank you so much for speaking with us today. And
no problem at all.
I hope that you get a few more visitors to your site after this podcast.
Well, they're welcome to come by. And I hope if people, you know, see anything they disagree with, then they let me know, because, you know, I want my site to be accurate. And we change things when people draw new material to our attention, and you know, we're happy to switch characters around when we find that we've labeled them incorrectly, or we're happy to add evidence to our subpages, you know, citations and references.
All right, well, great. Thanks a lot. And
thank you very much.
And you're sick of this disguise. When will you open your eyes? And we cried, come save our lives. Just can't wait for another day's gone by. We're much too high, we'll be expecting Superman. And it's things that keep us up at night, searching for God, asking a question.
I'm not a radio host, but I play one on your iPod. My name is Duncan Crary, and you're listening to the Humanist Network News. That song was Expecting Superman by Rich Reich. Before that, you were listening to an interview with Preston Hunter, creator of comicbookreligion.com, a subsection of the web project adherence.com.
When you're visiting comicbookreligion.com and you're checking out the Legion of Atheist Superheroes, I know you will, check out the entry for the comic book titled The Atheist. That article references our very own atheist cartoonist Jeff Swenson, whose Freethunk cartoon appears weekly in the Humanist Network News e-zine at humanistnetworknews.org. Jeff's review of The Atheist comic book, which appeared in the H&N e-zine a few weeks ago, is cited on comicbookreligion.com. That was a pretty cool topic, wasn't it? Superheroes and their religious affiliations. Maybe you should call the H&N podcast listener comment line to let us know what you thought about that segment. 206-339-4168. Don't make me search Christian apologist websites looking for feedback on this podcast, okay? Now comes the sad part of our show. In July 2002, Dr. Tim Gordonier joined the staff of the Institute for Humanist Studies as the public policy director and lobbyist. Last Wednesday was his last day on the job at the Institute. Tim got an offer he could not refuse, a tenure-track professorship at SUNY Potsdam. Tim will be teaching political science, including constitutional law, his favorite subject.
So in your 4 years, what are some stories of some high points in your tenure here at the Institute?
Well, I hate to say I had fun, because this is serious work, and we're standing for something here, First Amendment rights. But I did have fun. I had my share of debates and arguments with religious right preachers and very conservative legislators about such issues as intelligent design, posting the Ten Commandments on government property, mm-hmm. taking under God out of the pledge. Mm-hmm. Always good issues to, provoke people. And I can't say I didn't enjoy it. It was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I think I gave as good as I got on most of these arguments. Mm-hmm. And the debate goes on. On a lot of issues 5-10 years ago, people used to just turn a deaf ear to us and mm-hmm. say, "You're cranks, you're crackpots. You're on the loony fringe here." I think what we've seen is a sea change in the last 2, 3, 4 years where people, they still may disagree with you on an issue, but they say, "You know what? I've never heard the argument from that position before, and, you know, it's something that reasonable people can disagree on." Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to sound like we should be in defensive, but that definitely is a change in a lot of people's minds. Mm-hmm. We still have a lot of people out there that, hell will have to freeze over, pardon my expression there, before they come around to accepting our opinions, our views on things as being sensible public policy.
Yeah. Well, Tim, do you have any advice for our listeners out there as to what they should be doing now that they no longer have Dr. Tim Gordonier fighting for them in the New York State Legislature?
I think we need to get more humanist and free thought people involved in activism. We need them to write their legislators, visit their legislators, tell them what you think about the issues, because this is a representative democracy, and they're not going to do anything until they hear from you and know that the non-religious community is not only large, but it's vocal, mm-hmm. and that it's involved in the political scene.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to be missed. And for everyone out there listening, if you happen to be hiking through the Adirondack Wilderness, keep an eye out for Dr. Gordonier. He sometimes likes to stray from the trail.
And if I'm laying flat on the trail, just leave a bottle of water next to me. I should be okay.
Well, good luck. We'll miss you.
Okay, thanks, Duncan.
Well, folks, you heard it. Dr. Tim Gordonier is moving to the North Country. But that's probably not the last we'll hear from him. He promises to keep writing columns for the Humanist Network News e-zine, and to make an appearance from time to time on our podcast. Anyone considering colleges who wants to help join the fight for secularism, you might want to put SUNY Potsdam on your list. You could get the chance to study under the great Dr. Tim Gordonier. That's our show today. Hope you enjoyed it. You'll hear from us again next month. In the meantime, be sure to read the Humanist Network News e-zine at humanistnetworknews.org. You can find transcripts of our podcasts and see photographs of our guests by visiting our podcast blog page at ihs.libsyn.com. The use of our theme song, I Ain't Afraid, was generously donated to us by singer-songwriter Holly Near. Listen to more of her music at hollynear.com.
To leave a comment about this show for possible inclusion in the next podcast, call 206-339-4168. If you want to record a listener essay for this program, send me an email at editor@humaniststudies.org. I'm your host, Duncan Crary. Thanks for listening.